It's Tuesday, November 17th. The Ravens lost an ugly game to the Patriots. Kyler and Nuke connected for the play of the year, and Tua cannot lose. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smart on You. Welcome back from a wonderful week 10 of NFL action. We had our ups and downs. We had gambling heartbreaks. We had Hail Marys. We had it all this weekend. And I'm wearing my Oregon shirt. The Oregon Ducks are 2-0. Gabe's wearing his USC hat. USC barely 2-0. So maybe we'll have some trash talk go back and forth. But we're happy to have you guys in after, look, man, the NFL is delivering. Every week, I feel like as we get closer to the playoff push, we'll get some better games. Some games are obviously more important. And I enjoyed football this weekend, Gabe. And by the way, last thing, how about the afternoon slot? Four important games in the afternoon. Never happens. Thank you, Masters, which is weird to watch in November. We had a Sunday, by the way. Never will happen again. NFL, Masters, Pac-12 football, all on a Sunday.
Wild weekend, great for betting, unless you took the Cleveland to cover, in which case Nick Chubb screwed you. Fantasy, a lot of screwed teams in fantasy too.
We're gonna get into the Nick Chubb thing. I just want to make this point very clear because it's very important to talk about this in the proper context. Everyone's like, smart play. Sure thing. I mean, you go up 10 with 50 seconds left, you win the game anyways. And I'm just being a bitter guy who bet on the Browns. I at least pushed here. But guys, it was 3rd and 3 at like the 40-yard line. Okay, he ran like 53 yards past the first down and then went out the one. It's not like when Gurley got the first down and kind of just stopped. Or I believe Westbrook did this way back with Andy Reid and the Eagles. Like he just got a first down and stopped. He went 53 yards past the first down to then run out of bounds at the one. Like I was, we're like, go, cover. Oh no, what are you doing? And everyone, of course, praising him. Look, they should, right? But like, let's be honest. With the conversation here, if they go up 10 with 50 seconds left and Texans have no timeouts, they're not winning that game. The Texans aren't. So Chubb, just go in the end zone next time, buddy. It's okay. It didn't hurt nobody.
Yeah. It would have been just fine if he'd scored. It's like the guy in, you know, these like murder mystery shows that we're all watching on Netflix and everything. It's the guy who crosses like 6 state lines and then the cops catch and he's like, I was just panicked. I was scared. Like, dude, no, you ran away. Like, you've been on the run for days. How are we supposed to believe that you didn't do this? You look super guilty, man. Like, yeah.
He got 5 more fantasy points by running the 50 yards. People are like, oh, no one cares about your fantasy team. I go, I don't know. He kind of ran for 50 yards after he had to.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he doesn't care for the last 6 points for the touchdown, but like, he cares a little bit to get 50 more yards. So, all right, let's get to our main topics of the podcast.
Yeah, well, so listen, I was super fired up to talk to you about this one. It involves the Browns division. Everyone's selling their Ravens stock, okay? We all watched that sloppy game last night or Sunday night. Lamar and company, they lost in that monsoon in New England. Pats were fine. I wouldn't even say great, but fine. Ravens, I guess, look kind of bad late. But our buddy Mina Kimes wasn't the only one to point out that Belichick seems to have like some mysterious control over the weather now. Okay? The weather was horrible when Baltimore had the ball.
Is he Jewish now?
What's that?
Is he Jewish now? Because we control the weather.
Yes, that's right. We do. I heard that we're in charge of that. The media and the weather and maybe a few other things. No, so Belichick, you know, went like Night King or whatever on the weather in New England. And all of a sudden, Lamar is a guy that nobody likes. The MVP from last year, nobody likes him. Jeff Schwartz, you were the person who tweeted, their offense is just bad this year. Look, dude, to you and everyone else, feels like an overreaction. Kind of does.
Well, the numbers don't say so. The numbers are very clear in this. If you look at their efficiency numbers, they're at the bottom third of the NFL so far this season. Lamar Jackson, and we talk about these advanced numbers, it's worth pointing out, right? The advanced numbers often measure efficiency, right? So the best way I like to explain this is like on third down. Let's say it's 3rd and 3 and you complete a 4-yard pass. That is an efficient play. You've gotten the first down. If it's 3rd and 8 and you complete a 7-yard pass, that's not an efficient play. It's more yards. Yes, it is. But you don't get the first down. So that's what these measure efficiency, right? Is a quarterback doing what he needs to do? Now, it doesn't measure if there's a scheme issue or if a guy wasn't open or not open. Like, it doesn't any of that, right? Did Lamar hit the right guy? Did he not? That's like more for Pro Football Focus. If you want to go to their grades and look at their grading system. But efficiency numbers over time tend to tell us a really good story on how a quarterback plays or doesn't play. They're very predictive of the future. So Lamar Jackson right now in the NFL is 27th. In expected points added per game. Not very good. Last year, near the top of the NFL. The Ravens offense, like I mentioned, efficiency-wise, in the 20s this year. Last year, very top of the NFL. there's many reasons for that. And not, it's not all Lamar's fault, but when you have an offense so centered around Lamar Jackson, he's going to get the blame. So here's what's happening. Their offensive line is beat up. It's a very big problem, right? Left tackle's out. The right tackle last night went out for a little bit. The right guard from last year, Hall of Famer Moster Yanda, retired this offseason, lost 100 pounds. Good for him. And also, so that's not really on Lamar, okay? Not on Lamar. Secondly, Lamar came out last week and said, teams know what we're doing. Yeah, I mean, yeah, yes, that's the same problem that Greg Roman had in San Francisco, is that teams know what you're doing. After a while, there's not a lot of plays in this offense. There really is not, right? And you can kind of get predictable with how you're going to do, especially with which guard pulls, which way Lamar's going to run, where is he going to throw, the play action pass concepts they're going to use off of this. And third, and this is sort of a more of a Lamar Jackson and a Greg Roman problem, the offense coordinator, is that the passing game is just non-existent. Like, there's no threat of a deep passing game. There's no threat of throwing the ball outside the numbers. There's no threat of a complex option system where running backs and wide receivers have different things to do in different plays. And so all those together equal an offense that's not very efficient.
Okay. I'll buy that. And I saw some of that in what I watched last Sunday night. But I also saw a team that for most of the game was kind of just doing whatever they wanted to do and eating a ton of clock. Like, that first drive was everything the Ravens have ever been talked about to be, right? Like 8 minutes, 90 something yards. They were running in every direction. Every pass was, guys were wide open. So I don't know if it's fair to say that the offense just isn't good. I think it's fair to say that in certain situations, maybe like monsoons, it's harder to do what they do, but they can still do what they want.
They drove all the way down the field and got 3 points, right? So, I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, you'd think you would drive down. But part of this too, Gabe, is that New England's defense entering this game, not very good.
No.
Not very good. And so you had a year where when you had an opportunity to really grab New England and dominate them. They dominated them last year, and New England's defense was better last year than this year. New England's defense this year, not very good. Your Jets scored 27 points on with Joe Flacco. Okay, so like you look at that. Plus, look, New England's offense hadn't played terribly well recently. They played good again. Good enough, I should say. It wasn't great. Good enough to beat the Ravens. So like there's all these factors that play into why people are off the Ravens. They've now lost to the Chiefs, the Steelers, and the Pats, who are not very good this year. Now, the Pats might win their next two games. They might be in the playoff hunt. We'll see what's going to happen. I'm not that impressed with them after that game. I think it's a good win for them, but like people are like, oh, they're going to make the playoffs now. I don't know, Gabe. They're going to make the playoffs now, especially with Miami and their ascension, and we'll talk about them in a second. So all those factors make this a game where Baltimore sort of kind of had to win. They're now three games back of the Steelers, with what, six games left in the season? So they're not going to win the division. Yeah. They're going to have to go on the road in the playoffs. It's just a different season for them than one they had last season. And people are alarmed by that because normally you just kind of improve, right? The Chiefs are the same team, right? They're getting a little better. And they didn't get any better this all. They got worse.
Well, they have gotten worse on that line. That's undebatable. But you mentioned the Chiefs a couple times, so I'm just going to throw this at you, and I'm not just trying to troll you. I genuinely want you to react to this. I looked it up. As you probably recall, the Chiefs lost that like heartbreakingly close Week 10 game last year to drop to 6-4. They lost to Tennessee last year.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone panicked. We talked about, oh, maybe they're all offense. Maybe they won't figure out. Okay, well, what'd they do? They ripped off six in a row, and then they blew through the playoffs and won a Super Bowl because they had a world-class quarterback and a defense that got better. So this team, Baltimore, already has the best defense in the league in terms of points per game allowed. They've got a world-class quarterback. If they can get the line play working a little better, why are we giving up on them?
Yeah. So the difference, obviously, was the Chiefs basically lost at least two of those games with Mahomes. He came off the injury to the Titans, and then they still put up 32 points, I think, and lost that game at the very end. He was injured against the Colts, and they lost a game without him. So that was three games, really, when Mahomes was beat up. The Ravens, they don't have that excuse. They don't have the excuse of like, oh, well, my quarterback dislocated his knee, and so we lost a couple games. And also, the Ravens' problem is they lost to teams that they're going to have to beat in the playoffs. The Chiefs, I know it's bad to lose to the Texans, who they then smash in the playoffs, or the Colts, or the Titans, who they end up beating again in the playoffs. but the games just look different when Kansas City lost last year than the Ravens have lost this year.
I can't argue that point. And you give me the opportunity, though, to bring up a team who you've been largely right about, but still have a little bit of a qualifier on, which is the Steelers. You've been telling us you like them a lot this year. They've obviously had a great start, but you keep on saying they aren't explosive on offense. They don't necessarily have that extra ability to score quickly or in bursts. Well, yesterday, I don't know, man. Like, what was it, 300-plus passing yards, 4 touchdowns? I mean, Ben looks about as good as he has in years, and he's got a bunch of weapons, it seems to me. So are we ready to say that maybe this is the week? Maybe they unseat the Chiefs? Maybe?
Well, not yet. Okay. But I do think that Pittsburgh played a lot better this week, especially in offense. And it was kind of an interesting game. It felt disjointed at the start, and then Pittsburgh kind of got things going a little bit. Yeah, they scored a ton of points. I give them credit. They played much better, and we talked about this, and I think people that watch film and watch a game are also on my side on this, is that, look, they have got to be more explosive on offense, and they must have been listening to our show because they tried to be more explosive on offense this week, which is the way they have to beat the Chiefs, is by doing that. So I give them credit. I'm not ready to put them above the Chiefs yet. Look, again, I think that's very clear. There's one elite team. It's Kansas City. And I'm telling you right now, it's Tuesday morning. The Chiefs are going to kick the shit out of the Raiders this weekend. I'm just telling you right now. Andy Reid's like 17-3 off a bye. This team lost the Raiders. The Raiders are feeling high and mighty about 3 or 4 wins in a row. Chiefs are going to walk in to, I bet, some Oakland, but to Las Vegas, that brand new Death Star, the all-black stadium, right outside I-15. And they're going to steamroll the Raiders. I'm telling you right now, just lock that away for later in the week. Chiefs -7. I already texted Matt Ford and said, we're betting Chiefs -7. It's already happening. It's done. It's already in the books. Just letting you guys know. So when the Chiefs win this weekend on Sunday and beat the Raiders by 2 or 3 scores, we'll have a different opinion about them. They were off all week. So I just think that the Chiefs are still the number one elite team. Underneath you have Pittsburgh and New Orleans and Tampa and kind of the other teams.
Okay. All right. So to wrap on the Ravens, we're basically saying it wasn't just the weather.
Because New England moved the ball too.
Yeah, they did. I mean, again, it was weird how the weather was seemingly much better for Cam and that offense than Lamar and his, but yeah. Okay. So we're going to say we're done worrying about the Ravens. We are putting them to bed, even though we couldn't have put the Chiefs to bed at this point last season. We'll come back to them if they put a few wins together and the line looks better. But for now, sorry guys, Lamar's just your fantasy quarterback. Let me move to a guy who's more than just a fantasy quarterback. Holy shit. Kyler Murray. He bailed everyone out yesterday with the Hail Mary to D-Hop. That was incredible. Josh Allen had completed the best game-winning drive of the year. The Bills had done it. And then Kyler outdid that. Everyone saw it by now. I don't need to try to describe it on a podcast. It was unbelievable. It totally validated that move to bring DeAndre in. Kyler is now the MVP. I don't think anyone's debating that. They're leading the perceived best division in football, and that's what I want to talk about. I think the NFC West is just the Pac-12 that cares even less about defense. All right? I don't know, man. After what we saw on Sunday and three teams now knotted at 6-3, I don't think a champion is coming from this division. I think a lot of points are coming from there, but not a champ.
I'm glad you said that because I agree with you about
that. Oh, look at this.
And I wrote about this for Fox Sports, is that they're obviously 6-3. And what I love about the NFL, then we all about the NFL, is one play flipped an entire seeding of the playoffs. Now, it's week 10, so there's plenty of time left over. We're heading to week 11. But, you know, the Cardinals entered that weekend at the bottom of the playoff standings for the teams that are eligible they're in and ended up at the very top, second seed, leading the AFC, the NFC West at 6-3. And Seattle now all the way dropped to 7. By the way, Tennessee Titans currently not in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just random side note. I thought someone tweeted about that. Kind of odd. Seattle's all the way down.
You chose now to troll Tennessee. I figured you'd wait till they came up, but fine. Keep going.
Oh, that's all I said. I saw someone tweet that. Yeah, and the Seattle part was wrong. Seattle's seven. Okay. So here's why each team is a little bit flawed, in my opinion, not good enough to win a Super Bowl. Let's start with Arizona. They're leading the division now, and they play Seattle Thursday night, which I think they go in there. I think Seattle wins that game, but again, we'll get to that on our Thursday show. Arizona is just kind of poorly coached. Like, Kyler Murray makes up for a lot of the issues that Kingsbury has with his conservative play calling. They're very bad at end of games. They do not manage the situations very well. They waste plays. They waste time. They don't call the right plays. They call passes. They just call runs. They don't go for it on fourth down enough. There's just something about Arizona when you watch them play. It's like There just needs to be more. And Kyler Murray ends up just saving them, right? Like, how many times do you watch them play, Gabe, and this offense looks kind of disjointed, right? Just looks like what are they doing out there? And again, they're scoring a bunch of points, but I think if you take Murray away from that offense, and this is, you can say for anybody, but you take Murray away from that offense, like, what are they? What offense are they? And then defensively, they've had a lot of injuries, and it's piling up on them. The pass rush isn't as good. Now, they got some of those guys back this past weekend. They've had some guys come back in the secondary, but injuries have really been a concern of mine, and they just haven't been as good recently as they were the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season.
Yeah, well, it might be a schedule thing as well, but
you're playing better teams too. Yes,
yeah, I mean, I think they're just addicted to these 30-point shootouts, and you know they've won a few of them, but you can't. I mean, you can't guarantee yourself to win 34-32 every week or whatever it is. You know, it seems like every single week has been one of these. Holy crap, we have to talk about the Cardinals because of that win. I mean, that gets old. You need a few weeks that are just like easy W's. So they worry me. The Seahawks, by the way, dude, they looked awful. You've been saying this for weeks, and Cowherd's been right. You've been right. You guys were two people ahead of this. You can't have Russell doing it all, and now their defense is just dog shit, basically. They lost to the team who I think, by the way, may be sneaky. They're the least sexy, but they might be the best team in the division, which is the Rams. Do we have to talk about the Rams now?
So let's get to the Seahawks real quick. The Seahawks and Russell Wilson has turned the ball over 8 times the last 4 games. And the reason for that is what you just said, is I think he's trying to do too much because the defense is bad. Like, he knows he has to do everything, every single play, because the defense cannot stop a soul. And the defense actually played okay yesterday. They've been allowing 360 yards passing. They only allowed 302.
Oh, wow.
But they allowed a ton on the ground. And Russ is just making bad mistakes. He had a chance to run for a touchdown about 25 yards out through a bad interception. This team has not run the ball as well without Chris Carson. And Gabe, we got conservative, boring Pete Carroll back who wastes timeouts with bad challenges. Like, we kind of got like the bad Pete Carroll back against the Rams. So it's a problem. Now, conversely, the Rams. Interesting on the Rams. Defensively, really, getting really good. Number one in the NFL now in passing defense. They're really good on defense. We saw Jalen Ramsey shut down DK Metcalf on Sunday. Concern of mine for the Rams is this. Andrew Whitworth, their left tackle, is out for the season. Yeah. At least out for now. Maybe comes back for the playoffs. We'll see. We saw the Tennessee Titans lose their left tackle. Not the same team. The Ravens lose their left tackle. Not the same team. The Rams offense is not going to be the same. And we know that when Jared Goff gets hit, he's not as good. The Rams head to Tampa, I think Monday Night Football this weekend. Watch out. Like, that's going to be rough without your left tackle. And guys, there's no backup left tackles. Like, there's not just this a great left tackle sitting on the bench waiting to play. Now, they might put someone in who plays well in spurts, but there's no, like, perennial Andrew Whitworth sitting on the sidelines waiting to come in and save the day for the Rams. So I would be concerned with their offense without their left tackle, something to watch when they go to Tampa this weekend.
Can you, because this is the area of the game you know best, and I think most of us know the worst, which is line play. Can you explain a little bit more how depth charts are a little different on the line, right? So if you are the second best left tackle on the team, odds are you're playing right tackle, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a little different than, like, you might have a good backup quarterback. Jameis Winston's probably a pretty good backup quarterback, but he can't play another position the rest of the time. He has to wait till Breeze goes down. So how's the line different in that respect?
So, great question. So the depth on the offensive line is just not there in the NFL anymore. So the way it used to be, Gabe, was we had the 5 starting offensive linemen, and then you had 2 backups that dressed. One backup was the swing tackle. You play left tackle, you play right tackle. Someone gets hurt. And then you had the 7th guy or the 6th guy, whatever you want to classify it, was the interior backup. He played all 3 positions inside, both guards and center. So when someone got hurt, you had to put one player in. So you just move, you know, your left tackle gets hurt, you move the sub, you put him at left tackle, right? Now what they do, to your point, is there's not a lot of depth. So when the left tackle gets hurt, they move the right tackle to left tackle, which is what the Ravens have done. That's a good thing. So Orlando Brown moved to left tackle, and they put DJ Fluker at right tackle, who got hurt yesterday. They put someone else in at right tackle. The problem with that, in my book, in my eyes, is now you've made 2 positions worse, okay? You made the left tackle worse just by default because the guy's injured, so you put the right tackle over there. It's not going to be as good. Now you made the right tackle worse by putting another backup in there. So the lack of depth, that's where it hurts an offensive line. It's not really if you lose one guy. It's that you have to shuffle around your whole unit to make sure it works. And that's where the problems become for any team. So let's say the Rams, I don't think the Rams are going to do this, but they could take Rob Havisine, the right tackle, and put him at left tackle and put in someone at right tackle. Now you made two positions worse, right? So I hope the Rams just put someone at left tackle and work to help him. The best example in the NFL in this recent memory, 2017, the Eagles lose left tackle Jason Peters the year they win the Super Bowl. They put in Big B, Vitae, at left tackle. Did not move Lane over there, the right tackle. What they did, it was great. They helped him. So you helped one guy, and then you let everyone else be good. And that works. So we'll see what the Rams do as far as how they decide to engineer this offensive line now.
Wow, I'm very glad that I slowed us down to ask that, because I would bet almost anyone listening to this show did not understand that completely. And that is exactly what this show is for. So thank you for explaining that better.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to watch these games with that in mind, because that would have been helpful insight while I was watching the Ravens on Sunday night, because that's clearly something that's going on in their line room. We can't, you know, finish this topic without mentioning, we started obviously talking about the Cards. I want to go back to that crazy play and DeAndre Hopkins. So I can't think of a move that happened recently that has been more validated than the move to go get him. Now, maybe it was just a no-brainer, but like, I know you're skeptical of running backs, but are you willing to grant that maybe an elite wide receiver is worth every dime and you should give something up to go get a guy as good as him?
Well, that play definitely paid off, right? Look, I've been very anti-running back. I don't think I've been anti-wide receiver.
No.
I'm anti-wide receiver in the way that like people think that one guy can make a difference in winning a Super Bowl. What's a good example? If your team's rolling along and you're just like, you add a wide receiver, it makes you a champion. No. But if you have the pieces in place, you have a young quarterback on a rookie contract, check. Yeah, pay a wide receiver. Be my guest. It's a great deal. So I'm all for that, especially in this offense. Their offense, which is spread out, so they have Kirk and they have Hopkins and they have Fitz. Like they need these guys to make this offense work.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a pretty good clarification, because it seems like, yeah, if you have the right pieces in place, like imagine you're Deshaun Watson watching the end of that game and you're just going like, guys, what the hell? Like we had that dude. What were we thinking? But oh, well, so Thursday night, probably I would say the biggest Thursday night game in history. I mean, maybe I'm just forgetting a bunch of good ones, but who would have guessed that we would have essentially, I mean, whoever wins that game is basically the only challenger that the Saints have in the NFC, whoever comes out of Thursday night, the winner. Is that fair to say?
You mean like non-Packers?
Yeah, well, I guess non-Packers and non-Bucks. But yeah. No, I mean, seriously, is this the biggest Thursday night game ever?
Look, for Arizona, quite honestly, it's one of their biggest games in franchise history.
It has.
So, I mean, since they went to the Super Bowl, I should preface that by saying, because they went to the Super Bowl, obviously, is since then, yes, because if you win this game, you have a clear path to winning the NFC West, which puts you in a clear path for the 2 seed. I mean, maybe you have a home field advantage, maybe not, probably not. But it gives you a clear path to winning the division, which means you have a home game. And so, but the way it could work out, though, you could end up playing like the Rams or the Seahawks again in the playoffs. So it's hard to beat a team 3 times in a year. We saw the Panthers do this with the Saints a couple of years ago. Well, it might have been the other way around, whatever. But yeah, it's a big game for Seattle too. Seattle's got to show, man. Like they've lost 3 last 4, and they played poorly in some of those games, so they need to have a real bounce back. I actually think they do. What we talk about that, talk about that obviously more on Thursday.
Okay, so the team that just a week ago beat Seattle, and then just got their hearts ripped out by the Cardinals are the Bills. The Bills are a team you can't help but talk about every week. Even though they lost, are you sort of a little bit more sold on the Bills, or are you still writing them off?
As far as sold, like how?
Like, can they compete for the AFC championship?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to keep sneaking them in week after week until one day you admit that they can.
There's 2 teams in the AFC that can win it. And one of them is the Kansas City Chiefs. The other one is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Or, good segue, Jeff, or Tua time. Maybe the Dolphins can compete because they look like a completely different team. Tua is 3-0. He makes the Finns fun, and he might make them scary as hell in the playoffs. All right. This is exactly 1 year after the dude was carted off the field for Alabama. He is now perfect in the NFL. He has it, whatever it is. I don't have a smarter take. we're all just sort of in love with this guy. We're in love with what the team is doing. Their defense seems a little better. Their playmakers seem a little more dynamic. I don't think anyone really wants to see Miami in the playoffs, and right now that's where they're headed.
Yes. And just before I get going here, Shepard just tweeted out that Drew Brees has multiple rib fractures on both sides of his chest and collapsed lung. You want to cover that at some point today?
I think that seems like something we should talk about. And I was going to compare Tua to Drew Brees because that's what Colin did. But why don't we just pause and talk about Drew Brees right here? It's okay. We could have started the show with it, but we didn't know then. So let's talk about
it now. NFL players are tough SOBs, man. We get Jameis time now. You pay that $16 million quarterback. Oh, no, that's actually Taysom Hill. So Jameis Winston time now for a couple of weeks. And he just has to hold the fort down. Hold the fort down until Drew Brees gets back. Multiple rib fractures and a collapsed lung. Was it all from that hit yesterday? Yeah. The one they called the... That was a terrible roughing the passer.
I mean, it was obvious that I thought we were going to be talking about a clavicle from the way he landed. Ribs make sense too. It was obvious that he was struggling and I would have guessed not able to catch his breath. He wanted to go back out there, but he clearly couldn't and shouldn't have. How long are you normally out? A quarterback can wear like a flak jacket, right? How long are you normally out with ribs?
I don't know. I think he sort of had something coming in, right? They showed in the pregame. Wasn't he wearing like a big old flak jacket to warm up into? I think they saw during halftime he came back out to. It was something they showed of him warming up with a big flak jacket on. I don't know, man. Like, this is one of those where I think the Saints, you buy your time and you just hope he gets better and you can do enough with your defense and Alvin Kamara and your offensive line. You hope Winston doesn't, he doesn't turn the ball over and you just get yourselves to the postseason and hope Drew's healthy by then. This is bad. I mean, multiple rib fractures and a punctured lung. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what doctors smarter than me obviously say about this injury. So we'll see.
It's not great. Except I would tell you, if it's going to happen to any team, who looks like one of the top teams in a conference in the middle of a season, who has a playbook for how to handle this, it's the New Orleans Saints. I mean, they literally just did this. And Drew was okay by the time they needed him and they went back to him and he wasn't the reason they got bounced. So maybe this is okay. And, maybe Jameis, who's, by the way, Jameis, I was going to tweet something about this the other day. Jameis is better than at least a third of the starting quarterbacks in this league.
Oh, yeah, by far.
At least a third, right?
Last year he threw 12 more interceptions than he ever had in a single season in his career. He's not that bad, but that's the outlier season.
Also, if you look at what they're asking Drew Brees to do, and I recognize that it's because Drew Brees is so good at scanning the field and has such a nice touch, but basically he's just waiting to flip it over, rushers to get it to Alvin Kamara. Like, that's basically the job these days. He's not really using Michael Thomas the way we, we're used to. So why can't Jameis just do that?
I mean, his decision-making has not always been the best, though. I mean, that part of it is Drew's able to decipher things really very, very, very quickly, make it happen.
All right. Well, so we'll see what happens to the Saints. That is obviously a big curveball. We would have started the show talking about them had we known at the time. But let's get back to the topic of the future Drew Brees, at least the guy people compared to Drew Brees, Tua. You don't seem as sold on him now, 3 weeks of talking about him. What are you not seeing yet from him to want to just believe he's a playoff caliber quarterback already?
Great question. So here's a good summary of what's happening in Miami right now. They've won, five in a row, I believe. Now Tua has started three of those last five. Okay, so they've scored, if my math is correct, and I'm not very good at math, they've scored 11 touchdowns the last 3 weeks total, entire team, 11. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to give five to defense and special teams because they've scored three times on defense special teams. The other two, the ball was at the 1 yard line for the offense.
Sure.
Okay. It's five defense special teams. So that means only six on offense in three games. It's not very good. That's like what the Jets do. Okay. Now you can make the argument. You can make the argument that they haven't had to do a lot because they haven't needed to score because the defense special teams score all the time. To sum up my point too, Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders, DVOA. Miami Special Teams has jumped to like the top of the NFL since Tua has been there for 3 weeks. Their defense has jumped to one of the best in the NFL the last 3 weeks, and their offense actually dropped down. Does Tua play defense and special teams? I don't know. So my thing with the Dolphins is this, Gabe. I buy what the Dolphins are selling as far as their coaching staff, the effort they play with, their defense or special teams, Tua's future. I buy all of that. I just don't buy they're as good as their wins have shown lately. That's it. And do I think that they're a playoff contender? Yes, they're a playoff contender. Are they a contender to win? Are you telling me, Gabe, they're going to be the 7 seed and go into Kansas City in the playoffs in January and compete with the Chiefs? Not a chance in hell. I can compete with the Chiefs. So look, and they're going to win their next 3 or 4 games. They have the Jets, I believe, twice in the next 3 weeks. Like, they're going to win a lot of their games. But I still think that we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because their defense, especially, have scored so many points lately. That's not normal. You're not going to get 5 touchdowns over 3 games the rest of the season because your defense and special teams keep scoring.
You know what this is, Jeff? I said it a couple weeks ago. It's just the more we talk about it, the more obvious it is. It's just Tebow time all over again. The only difference is half the fans out there aren't rooting hard against this guy. Everyone's rooting for him.
It's the same damn thing. He's such a better thrower of the ball, dude.
I'm just saying the phenomenon. They're like, he's winning, but is it really all him? He's getting all these things working in his favor. Does he play defense?
No,
is the special teams his fault? Could he possibly beat a team in the playoffs? I don't think so. Like, it's the same stuff. He's just the same guy.
I disagree. There's nobody thought Tebow was going to be any better than he was in the NFL. Like, that's what he is. Tua makes some great throws. He can run the football. There's plenty of room for him to grow. He will continue to get better. He's already better than Tim Tebow is now. Tim Tebow won a game 2 for 8 passing, Gabe. 2 for 8. Tua's never going to win a game 2 for 8 passing. So I know you want to get your boy Tebow in here. I hope that he wrote you the royalty check and it cashed before the show. So you got your Tebow mention in there. And yeah, man. More information on Drew Brees. Came into the game with already 1 cracked rib. That's why he was wearing the flak jacket before the game that we saw that video was talking about. So, ooh, man.
I like how you tried to wave some Drew Brees catnip at me so I wouldn't come back at the Tim Tebow slander. Okay, so we're going to say, to summarize all of this, Tua is not the next Drew Brees yet. But he's also, if you think of the floor of Tebow, he's also not Tebow. He's somewhere in the middle, which means he's a playoff quarterback and they might keep winning. But you don't think he's no more of a winner in the playoffs than Josh Allen right now. He's a team that's going to get there and then he'll probably lose in the first or second round. That's what you're guessing?
Yes.
Okay. And Drew Brees, to sum him up, that's pretty serious and we're going to have to keep an eye on it. We'll learn more throughout the day, but we're going to give a giant like yellow light to the Saints, who we were about to anoint the best team in the NFC. We can't do that right now.
No, because of this is a bad injury.
Okay. All right, let's move the line. I want to know, this is our little over-under game. I want to know the percent of national media who are back on the Bucks bandwagon, over under 99%.
Choo-choo. Is Nick Wright back on or not
me,
yet?
No, I'm saying me and Nick Wright are the only holdouts. That's it.
That's so funny. You guys just Nick refuses to. I think most are back on. The Saints news is going to get more people back on the bandwagon. I would say that 99% of people are back on it.
They're definitely back on it because as soon as Brady does anything that restores the mystique of Brady, everyone forgets about the bad. We did it. We've done this twice already this year.
And they didn't play terribly well to start the game.
No. Look, he's got 900 receivers now. I mean, there's always somebody open. Yes, he can throw a good ball to an open. Like, what? Why are we so convinced the Bucs are a thing? I don't see it.
I mean, because they have good pieces and they have Tom Brady and like they play well for good spurts and their numbers are good. I think that the thing with them, and I still have to be cautious about, is that they're just something about them. I just don't trust them quite yet.
Yeah, exactly. They're guaranteed to be a favorite in like almost every game they play here on out. I would just tell, I'm not the gambling guy. You're the gambling guy. Fade the Bucks, man. Whatever points they're giving aren't worth it. They're going to get to the playoffs. They're probably going to sneak one out on like some Brady comeback. And they're going to lose in the second round to a team you didn't think was that good. We know this story. Aaron Rodgers is going to go get him in the playoffs. We already know this. Don't get on the bandwagon, everybody.
If they go to Green Bay, yes.
You bring up, by the way, as if home field has mattered. Weird stat. Home teams went 11-1 yesterday, but yeah, they had been losers. Road teams had been winners over the course of the season this year. Obviously, the whole thing's thrown off. Anything to read into that? I don't know what to make of that.
I don't think so. I just think it just was one of those weekends. That's okay. It. There's some fans are back, but not enough to make a difference. Maybe it was a weekend where we kind of got back to normal.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about a few games in fast bursts here. I want to know wins before I give a shit about any of these AFC teams. Las Vegas, over under 9.5 before I have to give a shit about them.
Over.
So they could get to 10 or 11 wins before I really need to even like learn who a few of their players are.
Yes.
They're not serious.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, you basically told me that earlier. You said they're going to get smoked by the Chiefs and I don't need to take them seriously. I don't want to take them seriously. I'm just making sure. Cleveland, we talked about them with the Chubb run, but how about them as a team? How soon do I have to take them seriously?
Never, because Baker Mayfield just not the dude. They call plays like they're so afraid of Baker Mayfield screwing up.
All right, even when they get to 10 or 11 wins, which is coming, I still don't need to take them seriously.
Nope.
Okay, and the Colts, another team, they're going to get there. When do I take them seriously?
I don't know. I've not taken them seriously all year, but I feel like I sort of have to. They play the Packers this weekend. If they beat the Packers this weekend, it might be time. So I would say under. I mean, it might be time soon. If they beat the Packers this weekend, it's time to take a look at them.
Okay. I'm on board with that because I reluctantly will take them seriously. I fall for the, like, I don't know, the Colts defense is better than you think. And, oh, they can do this on offense, some DVOA bullshit. Like, I fall for it with the Colts. They do scare me when they shouldn't. So if they do beat a great team, I'm willing to get on board. All right, wins before Jeff gives a you-know-what about these NFC teams. Over, under 9.5, the Packers. We just talked about them.
I mean, what do you mean? What does give a shit? I mean,
do I have to take the Packers seriously? Do you have to take
them? Yes. They have Aaron Rodgers, yes.
Okay, so they get to 10 wins. We're like, oh, my God, maybe they could do it.
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say the same of the Saints, but obviously their whole setup just changed. So we are formally in a holding pattern for them. How about this? The New York Football Giants. How many wins till I have to take them seriously?
The 3-7 Giants. God, what a shit division. Dude, there's a realistic scenario where the division winner is 5-10-1 or 5-11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So never. No, not this season. Don't take them seriously. I'll give Joe Judge a shout out though. They've been better than I thought they'd be. So credit him.
Okay, that's nice. I think we're done with the Eagles. We're done talking about the Eagles. It doesn't matter whether they win, lose, or tie from here on out. Let's never talk about the Eagles again. I saw this. So this feels like the right place to bring it up since we're talking about playoff teams. Playoff bubble. Report in the Washington Post. Idea would be to have teams quarantining in their own cities or when we get to the conference championships, quarantining at a neutral site instead of having home field advantage. Thoughts on any of that?
In a year where the home field advantage is not as important, I would say this is okay. But I will say, though, the weather is a big deal for home field in the playoffs. You know, like, I feel the Packers would be pretty pissed if they had to lose a home game. You work your ass off to win home field advantage or win your division. And if you take that away, then what does it matter where your playoff seating is? It doesn't matter at all, right?
No.
It doesn't matter at all. So I would say that I don't like it for football. But I get why they would do it. They want to, ensure that they get their playoffs off.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to see how aggressive they get and what they learn from these other leagues. I just want whatever guarantees us football in January. I don't want to hear about delays or cancellations sadly, I think the country's going to be in a very tricky spot in the next few weeks. I don't want that to mean costing us football. All right. Let's shift to something a little lighter. Your fellow lineman, David Bakhtiari, signed the biggest lineman deal in history.
Yeah.
So I want to know, how many beers did he chug Monday night in celebration of his $105 million contract deal, over under 10.5 beers.
Oh, way over.
Way over.
Way over, yeah. He said he would have a stogie, hang out with his fiance, his dogs, and have a beer, a lot of beer. He chugged a lot of beer, I would imagine. Good for him. 63 million guaranteed, I believe. So, good for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he seems like if you're going to pay somebody that much money to do a job.
Pay him.
Pay him. He just seems like he knows how to do the job. He also just seems like a good dude.
He's also very good at his job.
Yeah. Congrats to him. We'll watch if that line can keep Aaron Rodgers upright and Aaron Rodgers can keep winning them games. I have to admit, I'm a little less bullish on them than I was earlier in the year. I've seen some things that make me wonder. They don't seem like they kill teams they should kill. I don't know about the
Packers. Yeah, it's a problem. Yes, that's exactly. Yes.
We talked about him briefly. I just want to know, guess here, over under, Nick Chubb cost people over under $10 million on Sunday.
Are we thinking both directions or just people that backed the Browns?
Well, let's talk about Browns. Browns bettors who lost.
I would say over.
Yeah. Seems like it was right there. I mean, I think everyone's phone, you know, whoever they're in the their contest.
I think I was texting with Matt at that time too. Or maybe Matt was, I don't know what it was. It just was, oh, dude.
My buddy Travis and I enter picks. It's like the
brutal.
One of the you know, online services does something kind of like the Super Contest. And so we do it every week. We pick five games. And he hit me with before I could even reach my phone, like, ugh, Chubb. So we pushed instead of covering.
Same here.
Yeah. All right. We'll end on two hoops over unders. Jeff, I want to know, Jeff bets against the Nets if James Harden gets traded there. Over under 71.5 games.
So they'd have Harden, Durant, and Kyrie Irving, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw Kyrie doesn't want this to happen. No, shocking. And you know, if they have a full NBA season, I would go under here, the win total. And here's why I would go under. That's a lot of basketball to go around with only one basketball. Like there's like a lot of guys want the rock. I'm just not sure it's gonna work very well with all those dudes and Harden being inserted into that lineup.
Also, here's the deal. We did this already when swap Kyrie for Russell, make all of them less famous and less sure they're the guy, and they couldn't make it work then when they had a pretty good team trying to build to a championship and they were all still relatively humble and unknown. Now, there's no chance. So the question technically was, how many times are you going to bet against them this year over under 71.5? Not every how many game. Wins will they have?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Nick pointed out that there are 72 games this season. I will probably bet against them all the time.
Okay, let's just fade the Nets if they trade for James Harden. Last one, chances we see a May Madness. This is something that's being floated, I think, by Rick Pitino, who's coaching at Iona in my hometown.
I know that I saw today the report. I don't know. I saw that there is a talk about doing a March Madness bubble in Indianapolis during March. The problem with this, Gabe, is that there's no way an indoor basketball season does not get delayed by multiple weeks throughout the year of just games getting canceled. And probably games like day of in this case, that, you know, all these games are at night and they travel so much. So I think it'd be smart to move it back to May. You know, the vaccine, they said, should be start rolling out in maybe January for high-risk individuals and maybe by everyone else by March. And we hopefully get over this. And let's say March is the earliest, April maybe. I mean, like, you might need some time to draw out this season. I think it'd be best to push this to May and have some May Madness.
Yeah, May Madness. All right. Well, I'm all for it. The Masters proved, I think, that, you know, we like sports whenever we can get them. It was weird seeing the Masters, you know.
It was.
At 6 o'clock, everyone's sort of playing with shadows and stuff. It was just odd, but it was still cool. And so let's take a fun May weekend or two instead of a March weekend or two. Big deal.
I'm with you.
All right. Well, Jeff, we barely talked USC Oregon. I just want to say to you that Oregon might have more commanding wins. They might be the better team, but you got to admit, dude, Keaton Slovis has something, and watching him play in the fourth quarter is fun as hell.
It was incredible. For 58 minutes of that game, he threw wobblers that I think our kids could throw. Like, just wobbly passes, these ducks that were just terrible. And the last drive of the game, just Dart. I prefer, you know, my team to blow out other teams that aren't very good. I mean, I know USC is in this thing now where they just beat Arizona State by a couple points and they rah-rah and fight on and all this stuff. I don't know. I just like my Oregon team to go up to Washington State, play a terrible second quarter, turn the ball over three times, still score 43 points and win by two touchdowns. I don't know. I feel like that's the better way to go, but whatever. You know, if you want to squeak by Arizona, be my guest. If you want to, you know, I'm glad because Clay Helton will be the coach next year. Oregon can recruit against him. We can play against him. It's all roses for Oregon, man.
Okay. Well, I'm going to just say that quarterback led him to two comeback wins and look like a gamer. And we'll play some tougher teams down the stretch. And all of a sudden, the Pac-12 might have at least two teams. You could tell me if there's more, but at least two teams who are going to be talked about in the championship, which I never thought was going to be possible this year. I thought Pac-12... see in 2021, but maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a way, no. Right?
It's very unlikely that all the Pac-12 teams play all their games. I mean, USC's game already got canceled this weekend, I believe, right? Or USC, it's USC Utah, it's about to be canceled. Yeah. They're not going to play this weekend. Right. USC won't play this weekend. Unless there's open date. You know who else has an open date this weekend?
Oregon?
Notre Dame.
Oh, let's squeeze, and that'd be the same weekend they always squeeze it in there. So why not?
Well, not, sort of close the same weekend. It doesn't matter. But yes,
thing. Yeah.
But Notre Dame probably doesn't even want to play that game because why? There's no point for them to play that game.
I wouldn't go near that game if I was Notre Dame.
No, 0 point. So yeah, I don't think a Pac-12 team. I will say this right now. Today is, as we're recording this, November 16th. It is 3:03 p.m. Eastern. I would like to declare that starting in 2021, Oregon will be a legit title contender. Not like one of these fluffy Oregon teams with Chip Kelly that tried to out-scheme you. Like, punch you in the mouth, physical, can actually compete nationally. We're going to have three straight top 10 recruiting classes. We're having an offensive line that returns intact, a quarterback that returns intact. Almost all our players come back. We have the youngest team in the country right now. Youngest starting team in the country, Gabe. We're going to be really good for the next 3 or 4 years, and I hope we can get a title in that time.
Well, I applaud your optimism, and I look forward to Keaton Slovis ruining your title shot in the final seconds of a game this year or next year, whenever the time comes. But it was fun chatting with you.
You should worry about beating. Just hope you can beat Colorado at some point this year.
It won't matter. All we got to do is, you know, shoot some ducks out of the sky, and it's a good season. So, Jeff, you made us a lot smarter, specifically on that line depth chart stuff. Yeah. That was great. I have a whole new understanding of that situation and a different kind of faith in the Ravens. I'm holding on to the Bills, but thank you for making me smarter. It was a fun weekend of football. I'm glad to talk about it with you.
Glad to be here, of course. Please rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back on Thursday. More gambling. Hope Drew Brees can heal up fast. That's a bad injury, guys. All right, guys. Talk to you in a couple of days. Take care, everyone.